It's time for To The Last Drop podcast with Liam Del Calm and Brendan Nell.
This is To The Last Drop. I'm Liam Del Calm.
And I'm Brendan Nell.
In this week's episode, we have a returnee, a man who was on our show last week, Gavin Rich, writer for Supersport and a few other publications. I'm sure, Gavin, that you've observed a couple of things since we last spoke that would have given you some proper insights into the second test ahead of us, Ireland against the Springboks in Durban, the Irish hoping to secure a draw in the series. What have you made of the first one, and what are we kind of looking forward to in the second?
Well, as you said, I've seen some things. I've seen some talking heads down at the team hotel. You know what press conferences are like these days. So I remember the old days when we went on tour, the guys, the supporters would come up and say, "Is the Manarech?" I can't answer that question because we're not as close and intimate with them as we used to be. Not intimate in a sort of sordid way.
No.
But I certainly think that the momentum that people spoke about last week when the Box won is being carried through into this week. I think the guys are all very positive. There's a feeling that, although not every rugby writer in South Africa might agree, there is a feeling that the Springboks are on the right track. And we had a couple of interviews with guys this afternoon, some of the backline players, and Jesse Creel and Damian Delendi, all very positive about the contribution of one Tony Brown, of course, the former All Black fly half and Japan. Assistant coach. He has never ever head coach, was he there? I actually was trying to figure that out the other day. As far as I know, he was always assistant to Jamie Joseph. But anyway, there's a lot of positivity. Not everything worked last week, but there's a feeling that we've got a whole lot more threats in our attacking game now than we used to have, and without sacrificing the strengths and the old strengths, of course, being running around the core. You know, when it comes to attacking. Attacking around the corner onto the opposition line. And our defence, although it became a little bit porous towards the end of the game last week, is still on track as well.
Brendan, I put it to you. Ireland, are they on the back foot? They obviously went 1-0 down, but they also picked up a couple of injuries that I don't think it'll help their cause. I think now they're probably scrambling to get the best potential 15 onto the field.
Yeah, I think that's so much. You know, they've got quite a lot of depth. I mean, we keep on talking when we talk about Leinster about how much depth they have, and Munster as well. To me, I was listening to another podcast, the Times podcast, and Peter O'Reilly, the Irish writer, was talking about how it's the end of the season and fatigue. And I was perplexed because our guys, are also most of them, are at the end of their season. Maybe not the Japan guys, but certainly the guys playing in the URC and Europe are at the end of this season as well. And no one in the Springbok camp is talking about fatigue. So Ireland has got a bit of a problem. I think they've got enough out of that test to keep them motivated and ready to go hammer and tongs into that second test. But I think there is a little bit of a worry there that maybe the Box just are on a bit of a better psychological and physical high than they are going into this test. I'm not sure if that's just talk and that's just the vibe around this, but you sort of get that idea that there's two different mindsets in the two different camps.
Yeah, I think if you look at the Ireland season, I mean, it's been an up and down one for them. They obviously had that stunning win against the Springboks in pool play at the World Cup. They went on, obviously, they got knocked out of that tournament. They bounced back very well in the Six Nations, winning that competition, although not as convincing as last season. Some of their players, or their top players then, if you look at their clubs, didn't quite get the results they wanted in the URC. And of course, they lose the first test here. It's been a bit of a mixed bag for them. So they would want to go out on a high, Gavin. Are we overplaying this? That, is the second test as important as we make it out to be?
Yes, it is. But it is important. I think it's very important for South Africa and for them. I don't think that they want to lose a series to South Africa. They won a series in New Zealand, broke new ground, crossed the frontier 2 years ago. So I think that they very much want to win, and it is a huge matter of pride. I mean, I looked at the world rankings today. South Africa have gone 4 points ahead. I know not everybody pays that much attention to world rankings, but you know, that's quite a big margin. I'm not sure. You guys can maybe correct me. I'm not sure that South Africa has ever been that far ahead since the world rankings came in. Even in 2009, I looked. We were never further than about one point ahead, because the All Blacks, of course, were much better in those days. They're not. They've slipped a bit. So, and obviously, beating Ireland, who's the number two team in the world, means that the Springboks got quite a lot of points from last week's game. But just from an Ireland point of view, is I don't think that I would read too much into sort of like the sort of aura of negativity that, or the attitude of negativity that appears to be coming out of there. I think that in a rugby match, often when you watch a game in a series. Or when a team's playing another team and you know they're going to play against each other soon, you look at the momentum at the end of the game. And Ireland had quite a lot of momentum at the end of the game at Loftus. And I think that will give them some confidence. They struggled in the first half. They battled to – I think the box surprised them. I think the box surprised them with the expansiveness of their game. They struggled initially. They gave away that early try. And for the first half hour, maybe the first whole half, they were pretty much dominated, I thought, by the box, but they didn't fall too far behind, and they were 5 points behind. And then in the second half, they weathered a storm, I think, initially in the third quarter, but then they came right. They came right later in the game, and I think that will give them a lot of confidence. I think that will make them think that they can maybe even matters on Saturday. Come back probably and give South Africa a good go and start better this time than they did at Loftus.
Apart from the way they finished that game, also historically, if you go back to the series they won in New Zealand, they had to bounce back. Is there anything they can take out of that, or that experience? I know that a lot of the some of the players have obviously survived from that series. Is there anything there that they can draw on in the second test, Brendan?
Yeah, I think there is. And I mean, I agree with Kevin to a large extent about the momentum thing. If you look at the stats, I mean, Ireland had 90% possession in the last 10 minutes. I think it was 88 or 90, somewhere around there. And, they certainly, other than that last scrum of the Springboks, they certainly were on the front foot, and they had a couple of calls go against them in that time as well. But you certainly had the sense they could easily, if one or two calls went differently, come back and won that game. So there'll definitely be enough to keep them interested, and they'll do that history. They'll talk about this being their last week of the season and giving them all, and you're already hearing it in some of the press conferences that they're doing. They've got nothing to lose coming into this game. Everybody sort of expects, when I say everybody, probably the South African public, expects that they're probably going to lose the second test. So, everything's in a way in their favor to cause that upset. Sea level at Durban will suit them a lot more than the altitude did. Although, I mean, they made so many breaks in that game that the altitude wasn't really affected, Loftus. But I think they will definitely draw New Zealand in that experience. And depending on who comes in, if Robbie Henshaw goes out and Gary Ringrose comes in, that's not really, you're not really losing too much there. And especially Ronan Keller coming in for Dan Sheehan. These are both extremely experienced players. So I don't think Ireland are going to be any weaker. I think it's, at the end of the day, it comes down to which team sort of adapts better to what happened the week before. And I've often heard coaches say that playing a team 2 weeks in a row is quite difficult, because especially if you win, there's a lot more motivation for the side that lost to fix things and to come up with ways of stopping you than there is when you win, because you're just trying to do things better when you come back. So I don't know. I think there's a lot in this game still. I don't think it's going to be an easy game. I think it's just going to be as difficult as Loftus. And I think we've got an epic encounter on our hands.
It's a difficult one, but they didn't have the man available to them. But the loss of Jamison Gibson-Park, I think for that Ireland team, is absolutely massive. I think Craig Casey did a fantastic job in his absence. However, I just felt, especially on attack, Ireland just didn't have the same, I don't want to use the word urgency, but they just weren't as slick, they weren't as assured as they usually are with ball in hand when they put the ball through phases and they build continuity through those phases. I think they certainly lacked something there. Not that there's anything they can do about that now.
Okay. Yes, I was watching Brendan. I'm waiting for Brendan. I always like get accused of interrupting. I think that the way I look at it, I sort of like which team can be better this weekend. And yes, Ireland can certainly be better, but I've got a feeling that the Springboks can be a whole lot better. I think they can be a lot tighter than they were. And I'm not, when I say tighter, I'm not jumping on the bandwagon of those people who say that they must lose their expansive game. But I think that the South Africans made mistakes last week. I think that they probably been working this week on the breakdown. They've been working on trying to combat the Irish tactics at the breakdown. We saw last week how much pressure they put on Faf de Klerk around the fringes. And I think that the Springboks will probably have come up with some kind of plan there. I think they'll probably also be better in the scrums than they were last week. I know we all talk about that dominating end scrum that effectively clinched the game for the box, but you know it was a bit problematic in the first half, and there was definitely Ireland were getting away with a little bit of technical spoiling, and I think that the box have worked on addressing this week. You can never tell. What the biggest changes often in games, like between one game and another, are often in those areas, like in the scrums or in the lineouts. A team can misfunction completely in those areas on one week, and then the following week, because they've worked at it, suddenly they're on top of their game. And I think that could be the same in the loose forwards. I think that is going to be another titanic struggle in the loose forwards. I think it's going to be both teams are going to attract the ball ferociously, and it's going to be quite a contest. I just think that the Springboks are going to be better than they were last week, significantly better. I'm not so sure about Ireland, although I agree with Brendan. Johan. Ronan Kelleher coming in for Dan Sheehan isn't a huge loss. And Conor Murray has massive experience, and he's been around the block a few times. So as Rusty said yesterday, he will bring, and I see it's getting dark here. He'll bring some calmness, because both those guys are relatively young. I know Jack Crowley has played more than Casey at international level. But having a young guy with him last week might have been a little bit problematic for Crowley. Now he's got the old hand there, and he's got Conor Murray at Kings Park at sea level. I think that's obviously one thing in their favour. They don't have to think about the sea level this week, if indeed they did last week.
Something was mentioned earlier, and I think either of you can grab this, about the Springbok attack and how they used width, the effectiveness and of Peter Steff de Toey in the wide channels, along with Siya Kolisi on the other flank. By and large, it looked impressive, but there were also patches in the second half where you thought they were maybe just overdoing it, and there were a couple of Hail Mary passes where things might have or should have been a little bit more, should have been played a bit tighter, perhaps. What did you make of that, Brendan? Because, there were certainly some positives there and they looked good. I mean, that opening try was spectacular. It was breathtaking. But, of course, it's very difficult to sustain that kind of intensity on attack across 80 minutes.
I agree with you. I think at times they did overdo it a bit. I went back and watched the game. And it's quite funny when you watch the game live in a press box, and Loftus being a very, sort of enclosed sort of glass box, terrible press box in that way.
With people shouting in your ear.
I wasn't the friendliest person when people are doing running commentary in the press box. I try to concentrate on the game. But be that as it may, I think you can see they're trying. I think I don't want to use the word audacity, but the sort of confidence they had in trying out a new game against the number two team in the world. When you're number one, I mean, most teams would stick to what they did that won a World Cup. And the fact that they were willing to do that and they got immediate results, perhaps probably seduced them a little bit into thinking it was going to be a lot easier than it was. And then when you watch a replay of the game, I mean, I realized they left four or five tries out there. There was especially one where I can't remember who broke through, but Curtis Aronson knocked on the ball with an open try line in front of him. And that doesn't normally happen. And the tries they scored, the Cheslin's one was out of sheer personal brilliance. Those type of things, they used them at the end of the day, but they certainly left a lot out there, and they should be a lot better this week. But I think we've got to realize they are between game plans at the moment, and it's going to take a while. And their first priority is to win this game. So perhaps at times, I think there's nothing that stops them from going back to plan A, or plan B, should I say, the plan that won them the World Cup, if things don't go well for them. It's going to be an interesting game to see how they manage this. And of course, Ireland will have expected this, and they'll have analysed this quite a bit. And probably the way they got their defence right, especially in that second half, and the way they attacked the box at the breakdown, if they do that again, I think they'll see they have quite a good chance of doing it again and turning over quite a bit of ball again. It's going to be fascinating. In a way, it's like a chess game, I suppose, guys. I mean, it's just. Yeah, we're going to see what's the next move from both sides. And I don't think there's so many ifs and buts. And if this guy does that, then that guy does that. That's going to be very interesting. I see Gavin's fading away into the darkness, by the way.
Yeah, well,
yeah, the Durban sunsets.
Kate, do you want to turn the light on for me quickly? Sorry. Sorry, my daughter's doing that quickly. I was just going to say that in my match report, thanks, Kate. Yeah, there we go. In my match report, coming from the North Coast, in my match report on supersport.com, I did say that I thought that there were times in that game when the box reminded me a little bit too much of the Stormers, which is what Liam was saying when you talk about Hail Mary passes. Not quite as ready to get rid of the ball quickly as the Stormers, maybe. There is no Chiva Diomani or Warwick Gallant in the box side. But there were times when they were a bit loose. But those are teething problems that I think, that will come out. I just think it was quite phenomenal in retrospect that they actually won against the second-best team in the world. And it was more comfortable. I know they were nervous in the end and that Ireland came back and they were with 7 points. But it was more comfortable than I think we anticipated it being. I just want to say that it's a pity that we don't have Bernard Jackman on the show like we did last week, because I think that there were times in that game when I felt that some of the words that he had in this podcast last week were eerily prophetic. You'll remember that he said that he felt that the one chance that Ireland would have is if South Africa are between games. In other words, and he mentioned that Jacques at Leinster has put them a little bit between games in the sense that they've moved from being an attack orientated team to one that sort of emphasizes a defense a lot more than they did. And he did say that he thought that with Tony Brown obviously coming in, Tony Brown, he would never have agreed to take the job if Russie hadn't told him that their philosophy or that Tony Brown's philosophy was sort of where the box wanted to go right now. So I think that he was on the money. I mean, Bernard last week when he said that the one chance Ireland have, and it was the one chance that they had, because when the Springboks got loose, that was when they allowed the Irish back into the game.
Now, the interesting thing here is, do the Springboks feel emboldened enough to continue on that path this week? Or do they just go for the series and make sure they get it and they can revert back to what they're trying to achieve in terms of that long-term objective in the attack once they take battle or do battle against Portugal a bit later on, and then even obviously go into rugby championship? Or is it the case of go full throttle now?
I think that you've got to remember where they played that last game. They played it at Loftus. It's a fast field. You look at the URC games and in the past Super Rugby games that were played there. Any game that played at Loftus normally is quite high scoring. And I remember sitting when it was 13-8, heading towards the hour mark in this last game, and I was thinking this is most unlike a Loftus game because it looked like it was going to be a low scoring game. And then there was a flurry of scoring at the end. So I think that the Box probably were always intending to try and out tempo them a bit and run wide in that game last week, surprise them, and on the faster surface, because Loftus is a faster surface than Kings Park. I think that in Durban there'll be a little bit more balance. I think that there'll be a bit more that old word pragmatism to the Bok approach. I don't think they're going to put it away though. I think that the players are just way too excited about this new way. Somebody like Jesse Creel, for instance, is getting the ball now on attack as much as he gets it when he's playing club rugby in Japan, and that really excites him. And rightly so. So, and somebody like Damien Delendi has finally been recognised for one of his biggest strengths, which some coaches have recognised in the past, but often it's been like sort of neglected, which is he's one of the best passers of the ball around. So the South African distribution skills are, you know, there's so much potential in this Bok team. So I don't think they're going to want to put it away now. I do understand what you're saying, though. There's other games to come. This isn't the end of the game, end of the season for the Bok like it is for Ireland. This isn't like our sort of only chance to sort of to show what we've got. We've got other opportunities to do it. Watching the games last week, you know, obviously the All Blacks will always be tough in the Rugby Championship, but you know, I think we can. I know we've got a bad record in Australia, but I think you can go to the Wallabies and you can experiment a bit with selections and with game plan. And ditto Argentina, where you're playing them home and away. It's just the All Blacks that, you know, you have to sort of take a sort of real gravitas approach to. I think on Saturday that the Bok are going to play to win. I mean, not that they didn't this last week. I think that they thought that the way to win last week was to surprise them and to out-tempo them early on. On Saturday, I think we're going to see a more pragmatic approach, a tighter approach. But I think, I have a feeling that we're going to actually see the Bok score more tries than they did at Loftus. Win by more rather than score more tries. I think that's more to the point. I don't think they're going to. I mean, they scored three tries at Loftus, so that's going to be going some. But I think that we're going to. I think we're still going to be chatting about the Springbok attacking game on Saturday night and talking positively about it.
I think just to jump in there, guys, and just say as well, the one thing I think I think they'll probably be more pragmatic, knowing the Bok like we do, they wouldn't have been happy with the way the scrums went. Don would have put a lot of work in that this week to make sure that's right, to be a lot more clever. Bongi spoke about it also this week about having a much fairer contest there. So I think we're going to see a lot more of that. Plus, they were quite happy with their lineouts. But they weren't happy with their maul. Ireland stopped their maul quite easily. And I think that'll also be a work on this week. So sometimes, you know, when they factor those sort of things in, it takes away from the rest of it. I don't think they're going to go away from the expansion, but there might be, as Gavin says, just a bit more pragmatism in that. And, of course, then they've still got the 6-2 bench, which is as dangerous as we keep on hearing it is. I suppose dangerous to the scoreline more than anything else, we'll see that come on again. And I'm sure this week they'll be looking for more of a sort of front domination, you know, in the set pieces to set up that and give them more of a platform to attack more out wide.
Yeah, I think
this week also the boot will be quite important, more than perhaps last week. I think given, as Gavin described it earlier, the Pretoria or the Highveld it provides you a faster playing surface. So at Kings Park, you're probably going to see more tactical kicking. But then equally, goal kicking is going to become important, especially if it's going to be a tight game again. And I think some Springbok supporters were perhaps a bit concerned by what happened at Loftus. I'm not that concerned because if you look at Andre Pollard's record, overall, his average overall is basically mirrored by his kicking stats at the South African coast. It doesn't dip at all. It's exactly the same. So in terms of his history, kicking in Durban, in Cape Town, wherever, it basically mirrors, you know, his average overall.
Yeah. I was just going to say, Brendan, that you're going on, you were mentioning the Bok didn't dominate. Well, they didn't dominate in some areas of forward like they would have expected to, and I think that to some extent, forwards are their own sort of different breed of animal, different beasts. I mean, you can go. I remember a Currie Cup final in Durban in 2001 or 2000. I think it was 2000 where Western Province won because very early in the game. I think there were two intercept tries from Peter Rousseau and Brayton Fulsa also scored a breakaway, and Province won that game. And apparently the Sharks forwards were still celebrating in the change room afterwards, because they'd won the forward battle, even though I think the final score was something like 25-15. So I think that the Springbok pack will feel that there's that testosterone thing, that sort of physicality, that sort of Neanderthal sort of like forward sort of hodem, to use an Afrikaans word, where we want to sort of show them that we're not going to be bossed. So I think that there will be that aspect as well, as I think that they're going to try and get their maul to work this time. They're going to make sure that the scrums are more on point this time, and that dominant scrum we saw right at the end of the last week's game happens more frequently, although that would be a bit freaky if it happened too often in the game. But I just think that, just like Ireland, because Rusty is right, just like Ireland will have been stung by the defeat last week and will have a point to prove, I think the South African pack will feel that they've got a point to prove. And that's dangerous for Ireland.
Just like Liam's point about Andre Pollard, and I'm also not too worried. He's a guy who's got those clutch moments. He didn't have a great day at the office. Tony Brown did say afterwards that he was fatigued and tired, hadn't played for a while. I think let's just quickly to Tony's comments there, and then we can chat a bit further.
I think Andre, he played, his last game was 2 months ago. So I know in a game of rugby, when you're tired and you're a little bit of fatigue sets in, then the quality of your goal kicking definitely goes down. I'm not concerned about Andre's goal kicking. He'd be with another game under his belt. His ability to sort of be conditioned to go again, he'll be fine kicking goals. He's kicked well all week, but that's when you're fresh. When you're tired and at Loftus and you get into that second half, I just think it was fatigue, nothing to do with his goal kicking.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm hoping it's just a blip. There's not much you can say about Andrea, but certainly if the box had those 2-3 extra kicks, the scoreline might look very different, and the pressure on them in those last 20 and on Ireland would have been very different in that game.
Was there not a case in that game, Brendan, of, you were at the press conference. I wasn't in Joburg last week or in Pretoria. You were at the press conference where Tony Brown was talking about Andre being a sort of a work in progress. And, reading between the lines, he was saying he wants him to be more direct and play closer to the game line and all that. Is there not a sort of a tendency sometimes when you're working on a certain aspect of your all-round game, where sometimes your core sort of strengths might get neglected a bit? Not that he neglected it, but that, it was a different, he had a new challenge last week. He had a challenge that he had to sort of give whatever, he had to bring whatever Tony Brown wanted him to bring.
Yeah, I think also if you look at the type of passes in that game, he was throwing a lot of these skip bullet passes, sort of skipping out two guys and getting the ball quickly down the line and concentrating on that. You sort of wonder, maybe that's, he's not used to playing that game. He hasn't played that for a long time. He didn't take the ball up like Tony said he'd like to see him take it up more to the gain line a lot more. He was more distributor in that game. So, that's again, it's part of the evolving process. Andre's been, if there's any criticism of him, it's the fact that he's pretty sat in the pocket a bit over the last couple of years and sort of sat back a bit more and dictated with the boot. Yes, it seems to change that. We haven't been watching the Tigers that much, so we don't know how. I haven't seen him play that much for them. But sometimes to get out of that rough.
To that point, just to Gavin's earlier point, when you talk about Andre and the way he distributed there, the skip passes, it probably ties into the fact that what Gavin mentioned earlier, it's to get the ball out wide early, maybe bring in the surprise factor and play a game that is fast-tempoed, get the ball on the wing, stretch them out as much as you can, which we may not necessarily see in Durban. I think the box will be presented with a much different challenge and maybe a different modus operandi is required.
Yeah, I think it's very much there between game plans at the moment. And I think we shouldn't overly analyze. It was the first test of the season. In a normal first test, normally you don't play, or should I say the second test, because they played Wales. but you normally wouldn't say that they should be at their best by then. You would normally, by the rugby championship, is where we're looking for them to be a lot better. So I'm not too worried. They did get a win. I think they were all happy about that, and there certainly was enough to work on as well. And as Rossi said from my question at the press conference, he agreed that there was both good and both bad out of that for them. So and that's what coaches want. They've got enough to work on, enough to sort of grind the guys on the Monday and Tuesday, ahead of the next game as well. And it's not just rest on your laurels. There's lots of work, and that's what I'm sure they've been doing this whole week, knowing them.
Before we run out of time, we should probably touch on the centre combination, who will be celebrating a milestone this week as they become the most capped pairing, Bok pairing, Damian Dalende and Jesse Creel. Gavin, you've seen quite a bit of them. It's one of those pairings that they didn't necessarily come together naturally, but there were obviously other players who were more than capable of filling those positions. There have been injuries. There have also been four different Springbok coaches, since the first time those two played together in 2015. But it's only over the last 2 years where they've kind of hit their straps. And again, partly brought together by Lucanio Am's injury. But what has happened is you've now have a very formidable midfield combination.
Yeah, well, it's actually interesting because it wasn't that long ago when we were thinking of Lucanio Am as the best outside centre in the world. And you'll remember that test we lost, the Boks lost in Joburg in 2022 after having won in Nelspruit, and Lucanio almost kept the Springboks in the game in that match. I mean, I've been a little bit concerned that maybe in Lucanio's case, the injuries that he's had have possibly taken away his ability to step. That might be a problem, but I've always rated Jesse Creel, certainly on potential, and Damian and Dalende, I mean, he's played he was at the 2015 World Cup, and he's been and now we know that he can almost play two different games because he takes the ball up, but he's also a very good passer of the ball, and Jesse Creel is just has been given that sort of momentum in a way because of Lucanio's injury. Jesse was given several games in a row. And I remember there was a coach, he was actually a director of rugby rather than a coach in South Africa, who was quite concerned when Lucanio when it was announced that he was not available for the World Cup, that he was actually injured. There was a feeling that that the Boks are going to lose quite a lot by not having Lucanio, and yet Jesse almost turned out to be one of the Bok players of the tournament. So I'm just sort of quite flabbergasted that they're beating Jean and Jacques' record, because to me it doesn't feel like they've been playing together that long. I mean, when I first heard that, in fact Tony Brown said it, I almost wanted to correct him, saying no. I don't think you're right about that, but I'm glad I kept quiet. But it does seem almost flabbergasting that I thought that John and Jacques were around forever. I mean, it felt like they played a lot more than, is it 30 tests together? It felt like a lot more than 30 tests.
But the interesting thing is Lucanio also played, 29 tests with Damien. So, I mean, whoever Damian Dalende was going to start the season off with, he was going to break the record with that person. But I mean, as a centre pairing, the last 2 years they've been absolutely fantastic. I mean, I described them as on defence certainly as yard dogs, but they also thoroughbreds. I mean, in every other sense. Brendan, does that combination infuse you, or do you think the Dalende Lucanio partnership is the better one? Sorry for throwing you under the bus.
No. Listen, guys, you're talking about Jesse being and them being thoroughbreds. I've had the misfortune, and anybody who knows me, I've had the misfortune of having to gym with Jesse at one stage by accident. We ended up in the same gym, and anybody who's seen Jesse in the gym knows that I don't think he has an ounce of body fat there. He's definitely a thoroughbred, but that be that as it may, Gavin, just on your point, Jesse was in the 2015, and I think, in fact, they were the combination in the game they lost against Japan. Because Jesse was the guy who missed the tackle that was the last try that gave Japan the victory back then. And you think that just seems like years and years ago. I think on the Jean-Jacques thing and your point there, I think what probably made them play a lot less is that Jean had quite a bit of injuries over the years and was out with quite serious knee injuries. And that probably took away from that record a bit. Where it would have been a lot bigger. To me, the proof is in the pudding. They're playing great rugby. They were playing great rugby at the World Cup. And you can't really argue with that. And, while it's working, don't fix what isn't broken,
I think also what is slightly confusing here is Gavin, it's almost like they've had two different careers in that they played together for a bit, but then 2017 happened. There was that bad loss against Ireland in Dublin. Damien then kind of disappeared off the scene, and there was probably an injury or two. So it took them probably 3-4 years to be reunited again. So they played again in 2022. So that's probably why you get the sense that they haven't played together that often.
Yeah, well, you talk about Damien not playing in 2017, and that was because the forgotten man of South African rugby, I always think of him as the forgotten man, was Jan Serfontein, was actually playing centre, and he was actually probably one of the best players under Alistair Kitsir, and he's never played again. So South Africa has huge depth if you think that Jan is still out there playing, and he could probably be brought in as an inside centre. And Damien Willemsen, to me, is probably more of an inside centre than he is a fullback. That's just my own personal opinion. But I was just going to say that I was a part of an interview today with Jesse, and I don't want to, like, because it's an embargoed one and it's for a week's time. But I just
Careful.
Reminded him. I just reminded Jesse that because he used the word wing somewhere, and I said, talking of wings, because he'd been talking about John and how he had always admired John, and he ended up playing with John a bit, and then he said that but then he was waiting in the wings, and I said, yes, quite literally. I don't know if you guys remember him playing on the wing outside John in that game against Argentina in Durban in 2015 under Heineke Meyer, where the Springboks were probably one of the most embarrassing performances, certainly on home fields, only maybe eclipsed by a couple of years later at exactly that same venue when in fact it was a year later when New Zealand did us 57-15. But So that's what you also forget about, Jesse, because Jesse's only 30. So he must have been like 22 then. And I remember when he first came in and was playing centre, there was always a debate about whether he should be playing centre or fullback, because it was actually as a fullback that he first came onto the scene. And I remember everybody saying, and I used to write back in the day, and maybe it was because Lacunyo had sort of established himself at 13, and I've always felt that Jesse was too good a player to leave out. I used to often say that he should be playing wing. And I'm going to be unpopular for saying this, but there are still times when I feel, when I watch the box play, and there are still times when I sort of think, well, as brilliant as our two smaller wings are, there are times when I do wish we had one big guy there, big, strongly built guy there. Just in certain situations, when you're a couple of meters out from the line and you want to use that physical force to get through, and it's not stepping and pace. And Jesse, to me, is often sort of – I've often thought that he could probably have done well at wing as well if he'd been asked to play in that position. But it was great seeing him on Saturday playing. I don't think that the Springboks have tried to play the ball to an outside centre on attack as much as that, probably since the days of Donny Gerber. And he really revelled in it. As I say, he does like to get the ball in his hands, and he is like the sort of obviously the key man on defence, as the number 13 always is, and he is very good at that as well. And that's what he was really renowned for. In the not too distant past, but now we're seeing his full array of talents and his full sort of arsenal, if you like.
Yeah, he certainly doesn't mind the rough stuff. I remember there was a game, it was either the quarterfinal or the semifinal at the World Cup last year. He came into a mixed zone after the match, and very early on, he was quite happy to sort of put his hand on his head. to show us there was a battle scar that he was quite keen to show us. He said, you know, he was making the point that, you know, they're not scared to get stuck in and sort of bleed for the cause and, you know, didn't quite say we'll die for the country, but I mean, he was almost on that path.
Yeah.
I mean, this, I mean, Jesse, to me, I mean, since he's got to the Bulls, he's always, when he was right in the beginning, he was always stood sort of above a number of those players. Two of the players that arrived, I mean, more or less the same time, was him and Hundre at that stage. And I mean, they just, yeah, they almost, you could see they were going to be superstars from the beginning. So I'm quite happy to see that as well. And just the last thing on Damien for me, I don't know if you guys remember a couple of years ago, there was that whole sort of narrative flying around that Damien couldn't pass to the one side and he was so limited in the way he was a bit of a crash ball player, but and part of it was that he couldn't pass to the, I think it was left at that stage. And I mean, that's certainly been shown up as a bit of a joke, you know, that people who thought that he's certainly a great distributor as well.
Okay, chaps, yeah. I think we are almost out of time. I think it's almost time for predictions. We should actually make a prediction or two.
Yeah, I think so.
Go on, Gav.
I think we should, yes.
I was just going to say that, just before we go on to the predictions, that I do know what I was going to say to you was that Damien's also got quite a good kicking boot as well. And there was talk of at one stage of him being able to play fullback at Western Province. I don't think he ever did. But, he's a very talented rugby player. And it's nice to know that there's a good rugby player that came out of Milnerton who is sort of like starting to develop as a rugby school down there as well. Not that I went to Milnerton, but I live in the area. The predictions for Saturday.
Careful now.
Yeah, prediction for Saturday, South Africa to win.
We need you to be a little bit more specific.
Yeah, I think that they're going to win by more than last week. I think they're going to win by more than a score. They're going to win by what I said that they would last week. But they're going to – actually, I think that the score is going to be 27-15. Ireland aren't going to score a try. They're going to get five penalties, and South Africa are going to score two tries. And Andre's going to kick his goals this week. And Sasha's going to come on and kick one as well right at the end.
I think they'll probably win by about 10. I think we'll see a mall try from the box this week. I think they'll do that. And we'll see some more scrum dominance. We might see Ireland getting a bit of their own breakdown medicine. Well, that's what I'm hoping for at least. But I think it's going to be much more a tense test match. The box won't get away that early. They'll probably win later on in the game. I hope to see a box victory again. Ireland are still a very good team, so it's going to be tough.
I'm going to go for a that reminds me of a cricket reference.
Charles Fortune. Yeah, it was Charles Fortune after a day when Natal had dominated them. Charles Fortune said at the end of the day, Natal have dominated today. But Transvaal are still a very good team. Good day. And then he said good night.
we should have actually closed on that note. But anyway, I think it's going to be a closer scoreline, but the test itself won't be a reflection of that. So I think the Boks will win 20-15, but it'll be a comfortable 20-15. So Ireland will kick their goals, they'll kick their penalties. But they will be kept at arm's length for most of the game. And in the end, I mean, the Boks will probably rue a few opportunities that they didn't, when I say rue, not lose the match by it, but they will look back at some of those attacking opportunities that they didn't take. So 20-15 for me.
I was going to jump in and say, guys, that Brandon, we're setting ourselves up probably for a bit of egg on the face if Ireland do win. Some of the Irish listeners, if we have some Irish listeners, would be thinking that right this moment.
They're certainly capable.
But yeah, they're very capable of winning. I think we've probably said enough about the game now. I think we can almost end on that note. My final thing would be just to say to you, gentlemen, well done that we've had a whole podcast that was a Matt Williams free zone that we didn't talk about. Irrelevant stuff that doesn't matter that people try and get clickbait on, And then we kept it just rugby. So well done to all that. And Gab, I'll see you down in Durban pretty soon. I'll be down there tomorrow. And then you also going down tomorrow. So we'll see each other down there and we can continue this over a beer. Or glass of wine.
Thanks for listening. And a reminder, you can find all the To The Last Drop podcasts on the Brendan Nell YouTube channel, iono.fm, Spotify, player.fm, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, and iTunes, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.